call does not come from a stranger. It comes from someone you know. Someone who shook your hand, looked you in the eye, and told you this deal was solid. Low risk, private, quiet. The kind of opportunity you do not hear about unless you are trusted. Money moves fast, wires clear, statements arrive, questions are answered with confidence, then a payment slips. Just one. The explanation sounds reasonable. Delays happen. Markets shift. You are told to relax. Weeks pass. Another excuse, another promise. You try to pull your funds back. The answer changes. Phone calls go shorter. Emails slow down. Someone else you invested with says they were told a different story. Behind the scenes, bank records are already lighting up. Numbers do not line up. Accounts do not match the pitch. Federal agents start following the trail, not because of one complaint, but because too many people are missing too much money. By the time the truth surfaces, nearly $20 million is no longer where anyone was told it would be. Chapter 1. And stakes. The pitch does not happen in a boardroom. It happens in offices, restaurants, private homes, places where trust already exists. The Georgia businessman does not cold call. He reaches out through mutual contacts, friends of friends, people who have done business together before. He talks about access, deals most people never see, private investments tied to real assets, short timelines, predictable returns. He says he is hands-on, says his reputation matters more than paperwork. The numbers sound reasonable, not flashy, not too good, just good enough to feel safe. Some investors wire funds the same week, others take longer. They ask questions. They are told the money will be pooled, then placed into specific projects, real estate, private lending, short-term capital plays. The explanations are smooth and confident. There are no glossy brochures, no public prospectus that is framed as a benefit, less noise, fewer outsiders, more control. Handshake agreements seal the deals. Money moves into accounts tied to the businessman and an associate. The associate is described as an operations partner, someone who helps move funds, manage logistics, keep things running clean. Investors are told this structure allows flexibility. Early on, everything looks fine. Statements arrive showing balances growing, verbal updates come regularly. Phone calls are returned, emails are answered within hours. For many, this is retirement money. Savings pulled from conservative accounts because the returns here are better, but still described as safe. Others invest business capital, cash meant to sit idle until the next opportunity. The first problem appears quietly. A scheduled payment does not arrive on time. No panic, just a delay. The explanation is simple, a closing pushed back. Funds temporarily tied up. The businessman calls personally to reassure the investor. He sounds annoyed, as if the delay inconvenienced him too. The payment arrives days later. Confidence holds. Weeks pass. Another payout is due. This one slips as well. The excuse changes slightly. Bank processing issues, a paperwork snag, nothing structural. One investor asks to withdraw a portion of their funds. Not all, just enough to feel comfortable. The response is polite but vague. Timing is not ideal. Capital is committed. Give it another cycle. The investor agrees. Phone calls remain cordial but shorter. Emails take longer. The associate begins handling more of the communication. The businessman says he is traveling, meetings, deals closing. Another investor hears about the delay and reaches out to compare notes. They are told a different explanation, not a closing issue, a market delay, a regulatory pause. That is the first crack. A third investor asks about paperwork. They want something formal. The associate sends a document that looks like a summary, not a contract. It references investments that are never clearly identified. No addresses, no loan numbers, no counterparties. The investor pushes back. The associate says formal contracts will come later. This is how private deals work. Fast money moves first, paper follows, time stretches. Payments resume, but not at full amounts. Partial distributions arrive with explanations attached. Everything is framed as temporary, transitional, normal. One investor decides to exit completely. The request is acknowledged, then delayed. Capital is tied up. Assets are illiquid. The businessman asks for patience. He emphasizes relationships, reminds the investor how well things have gone so far. Another investor hears about the exit attempt and grows uneasy. They request their own withdrawal. The associate responds instead of the businessman. The tone is firmer now, less reassuring. At this point, investors begin to talk more openly. They compare statements. The figures are not consistent. Balances differ in ways that do not make sense. Returns are calculated differently. dates do not line up. One investor notices something else. A promised investment never appears in any paperwork. When asked, the associate gives a general answer. The deal was rolled into another opportunity. More efficient that way. The investor asks for details. None come. A quiet realization sets in. No one can clearly explain where the money actually is. Phone calls grow tense. The businessman starts deflecting. He blames his associate for communication breakdowns, says he is cleaning things up, says everyone will be paid. Then payments stop entirely. Emails go unanswered for days. When responses come, they are brief, apologetic, still confident, but thinner. One investor consults an accountant. They review the statements and transfer records. The accountant asks a simple question: where are the underlying assets? There is no answer. Another investor contacts an attorney. The attorney asks for contracts, disclosures, proof of investment. The investor has none. The attorney advises caution, then something stronger. Documentation should exist by now. If it does not, that is a problem. The investors hold a call together. For the first time, they speak openly about the possibility of fraud. Some resist the idea. The businessman has a reputation. He has been around for years. He knows people. He would not risk everything for this. Others are no longer convinced. They calculate rough totals. The number climbs quickly. Millions, not thousands. Each investor realizes they are not a small piece of the puzzle. They are part of something much larger. One investor files a complaint. Not public. Quiet. They want answers, not headlines. Bank records are requested. Transfers reviewed. Patterns emerge that do not align with any investment activity described. Funds move in then out quickly to accounts that were never mentioned, to expenses that have nothing to do with real estate or lending. The realization lands hard. This is not a delay. It is not miscommunication. It is not a rough patch. Something is wrong at the core. By the time the businessman schedules another call to reassure everyone, the trust that carried the scheme no longer exists. The handshake that once sealed the deal now feels like the moment everything went wrong. And somewhere outside the circle of investors, the first official eyes begin to turn toward the trail the money has left behind. Chapter 2, Escalation and Reversal. Once the payments stop, silence becomes the loudest signal. Investors stop waiting for updates and start chasing answers. Calls overlap, emails cross. Everyone is asking the same question now, but no one is asking it directly yet. Where is the money? The associate becomes the primary point of contact. He explains delays. He blames timing. He says funds are moving. He asks for patience. His tone is professional, but controlled in a way that feels rehearsed. The businessman appears less often. When he does, he speaks in broad terms. He insists the investments are real. He says this is a temporary disruption. He tells investors not to panic. Privately, investors begin comparing documents in detail. The statements are not just inconsistent. Some reference returns that others never received. Some show balances growing while others show flat lines. Dates are reused. Descriptions repeat across different accounts. One investor notices something specific, a return credited to their account on a date when no money actually arrived. It exists only on paper. Another investor sees a payment labeled as income that was actually a transfer from another investor's funds. That is when the theory changes. This no longer looks like delayed profits. It looks like money being shifted to cover gaps. The associate is asked directly how funds are being allocated. He provides a list of projects, but no supporting records, no purchase agreements, no loan documents, no escrow confirmations. Investors ask for bank statements tied to the investments. The request is denied. They are told those records are internal. An attorney hired by one investor sends a formal demand letter. It requests documentation, repayment schedules, and clarification of asset ownership. The response arrives late and incomplete. The letter confirms money was received. It does not confirm where it went. Behind the scenes, complaints begin stacking quietly. Not one dramatic report, but several cautious inquiries. Investors frame them carefully. They want information, not accusations. That is enough to trigger attention. Financial regulators and tax authorities begin looking at transaction patterns tied to the businessman and his associate. This phase is not public. No one is notified. Records are pulled without confrontation. What those records show becomes central to the case. Money flows into a small number of accounts. From there, it moves quickly. Some funds are transferred to personal accounts. Others are used for expenses unrelated to any investment pitch. Travel, luxury purchases, debt payments. There is no evidence of capital being placed into the projects described to investors, no matching outflows to property sellers, no lending activity consistent with the promised returns. This is not yet proof of fraud. At this stage, it is evidence of inconsistency. The associate's role sharpens under scrutiny. He is not just processing payments, he is directing transfers. He is authorizing movements between accounts. He is the one executing the mechanics of where money goes after it arrives. Investigators note that explanations given to investors do not match the transaction timelines. Money is said to be tied up when it has already been spent. At the same time, tax filings tied to the accounts raise questions. Income appears that does not align with declared business activity. Deductions appear that do not match legitimate expenses. That overlap draws an additional attention. The businessman is contacted through counsel. The questions are framed narrowly. Clarification is requested. Records are requested. Cooperation is expected. Investors are not told this yet. What they do see is behavior change. The associate stops responding entirely. The businessman limits communication to brief statements. He warns against spreading rumors. He urges discretion. One investor records a call. The businessman insists everything is under control. He says outside involvement will only complicate matters. He promises a resolution soon. Days later, bank access tied to one of the accounts is restricted. That is the moment panic sets in. Investors realize this is no longer something that can be handled privately. Attorneys begin coordinating. Complaints are consolidated. The language shifts from concern to allegation. Still, care is taken. At this point, nothing has been proven in court. Accusations are framed cautiously. Facts are separated from suspicion. Investigators move faster now. They map incoming funds against outgoing transfers. They identify patterns consistent with diversion. They estimate exposure by aggregating investor contributions. The number approaches $20 million. That figure is preliminary. It is based on records available at the time, not final determinations. But it is enough to change how the case is viewed. This is no longer a dispute between partners. It is a potential large-scale investment scheme. Subpoenas expand, additional records are pulled, personal accounts tied to both men are reviewed. The gap between what was promised and what exists becomes impossible to ignore. Investors are finally informed that authorities are involved. The news lands unevenly. Some feel relief, others feel dread. Once this process starts, control is gone. Meetings are held without the businessman or his associate present. Victims speak openly for the first time. Stories line up. The same assurances, the same delays, the same shifting explanations. Trust collapses completely. The businessman issues a statement through counsel. He denies intentional wrongdoing. He attributes failures to mismanagement and unforeseen complications. He places responsibility on operational breakdowns. Investigators do not comment publicly. They do not need to. By the end of this phase, the direction is clear. The question is no longer whether money is missing. That much is evident. The question now is intent. Was this reckless handling of investor funds that spiraled out of control, or was the diversion deliberate from the start? That answer will determine everything that follows. Chapter 3, Resolution and Aftermath. By the time federal charges are filed, most investors already know how this ends. Not the legal outcome. That part still lies ahead. But the reality of their money is no longer in doubt. Court filings lay out the government's position carefully. Allegations are separated from proven financial records. Language is precise. Dates matter. Amounts are stated conservatively, based only on what can be documented. According to the filings, millions of dollars entrusted for private investments were diverted to uses never disclosed to investors. Personal expenses, unrelated business obligations, transfers between accounts that served no legitimate investment purpose. The documents do not rely on emotion, they rely on numbers. Each transfer tells a story. Money arrives from an investor. Within days, sometimes hours, it moves again. It does not go to escrow. It does not sit in reserve. It does not fund a project. It disappears into ordinary spending. The associate's role is detailed through transaction authority and account access. He is described as a central operator, the person who executed movements, the person who knew at every step where funds were going. The businessman is positioned as the face, the one who made promises, the one who reassured investors, the one who controlled the narrative. Defense attorneys respond with statements denying criminal intent. They argue that business ventures failed, that funds were mishandled, not stolen. that poor judgment is not fraud. That argument becomes the core battle. Intent versus outcome. Investigators counter with patterns, not isolated mistakes, repeated behavior, similar explanations given to different investors while money moved in contradictory ways, statements showing returns that were never paid, transfers labeled as investment activity that funded personal expenses. In court, victims begin to speak. Some testify under oath, others submit statements. They describe trust built over years, deals entered without fear because the man across the table felt familiar, safe. One investor explains how retirement funds were transferred after assurances that risk was minimal. Another describes pulling money from a business line of credit to participate in what was framed as a short-term opportunity. None describe reckless gambling. They describe caution, questions asked, explanations accepted. Several investors admit they ignored early warning signs, delays, vague answers, missing paperwork. They trusted the relationship more than the red flags. That trust is now central to the case. The court hears how withdrawal requests were delayed even as funds were already gone. How explanations shifted depending on who was asking. How access to information narrowed as pressure increased. Asset recovery becomes a separate effort. Accounts are frozen. Properties are reviewed. Vehicles, cash, and other holdings are identified. The total recovered is small compared to what is missing. Much of the money was spent long before the investigation began. This reality hits hardest. Even if convictions come, even if sentences are imposed, the money is not coming back. The court process moves slowly. Motions, hearings, arguments over evidence. The associate's defense strategy diverges from the businessman's. Each distances themselves from the other. Responsibility fragments. Investigators remain focused. They present financial records, timelines, authorization logs. The paper trail speaks louder than testimony. Eventually, outcomes arrive. Charges are resolved through pleas or verdicts. Sentences are imposed based on guidelines and findings. Restitution is ordered, even when repayment is unlikely. For the victims, closure is uneven. Some feel validated. The system recognized what happened. Others feel hollow. Justice does not refill accounts. It does not rewind time. The case becomes known in Georgia financial circles, not for spectacle, but as a cautionary example. Private deals without documentation. Trust replacing verification. Handshakes standing in for safeguards. Financial professionals reference it quietly. Attorneys cite it when advising clients. Regulators point to it as a reminder of how easily informal investment networks can be abused. The businessman's reputation collapses entirely. The associate disappears from public view. Careers end. Relationships fracture. For investors, life moves on differently for each. Some rebuild slowly, others never recover financially. Retirement plans change, businesses close, futures shrink. What remains is a shared lesson learned at great cost. Fraud does not always look like deception. Sometimes it looks like familiarity, like confidence, like someone who sounds just like you. In the end, the scheme does not fall apart because of one brave whistleblower or one dramatic moment. It collapses because numbers refuse to lie forever. Money leaves a trail. And once that trail is followed far enough, even the strongest handshake cannot hold the truth in place.